That's sort of how I play life now, more like a video game.
I think you just gave me my favorite metaphor for how to think about failure. Had, I think, one of the most interesting careers of anybody I know. You've done everything from, you've been an illustrator, you've been a tech lead, you've been an engineer, you've been a technical writer. Like, you've done so many things. How do you find your varied experience has impacted your outlook on work?
Whoa, I don't know if it's impacted my outlook on work. I like to say I know how to do everyone's job, but everyone can do it better than I can. So I like to let other people, I like to let the experts do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you just burrow into one particular thing, you know, like you're only doing technical writing, you're only doing product management, you can end up with a narrower field of vision, which can create some tunnel vision when it comes to things like strategy and, you know, launching programs and seeing the bigger picture. Honestly, I just love learning new things. And once I've learned them, I kind of want to move on and learn something new. And sometimes I come back to things that I've learned before. My red thread is that I like working on projects that have the ability to change people's lives. You know, I'm always looking for the next big thing that people need to learn and teaching it to them. And sometimes that takes different forms. You need to take on different challenges to make that happen. But that's the thing that guides me throughout my career. I actually used to be a cartoonist in my previous life. I have a really good ability to tell people a story. So I was a professional storyteller for about 10 years. Turns out communication is like the biggest force multiplier in your career.
Can you say more about that?
I've seen a lot of really great people have amazing ideas but not be able to express themselves, so the ideas are never heard. Or somebody who has a similar idea but it's not as good does a much better job of communicating it. I don't know if anyone remembers Les. It was a competitor to Sass. Sass is written in Ruby. Les was written in JavaScript. The people who came up with Les were designers. They made great sites that touted why you should use it, how great it was. They're better storytellers, and this actually got the SaaS team to realize, wow, we need to get better at this. So they went out and they started creating working groups and working with people like me in the community who were more connected with the use cases and could help build the product better. I actually consider it a fairy tale story of how you could turn a product around that's lost its connection with its audience. And in that regard, you can really see, like, even though Les wasn't as good of a tool as SaaS, because they were telling their story better, they got a better pickup with the correct audience, which was designers at the time.
As someone from the outside looking in, some of the choices that you've made look like enormous risks. And so I want to talk to you about how you calculate risk in your own decision making.
I think I come back to a Shakespearean quote, there's nothing good nor bad, but thinking makes it so. And I always try to approach decision making. So when I'm looking at, for instance, a set of options, I like to objectify the outcomes first. Best case, worst case scenario. And then assign probability to those cases playing out in a given amount of time. To make a decision, you have to have a period of time and a probability, just like betting. And I keep a betting log, actually, on events. Like, if I make a decision, I put it into my betting log where I'm like, I made this decision because I think it has a 50% probability of this outcome that I'm seeking, which might mean, you know, to be happily employed for 5 years. And I think it has a 30% chance, but it's the only opportunity I have to be employed for 5 years in the sector I want. So that's a pretty good chance. And also the downside is I would just work there for a little bit and then I'd leave and nothing bad except maybe another LinkedIn entry I have to explain to recruiters.
Right.
The worst case scenario or even a fail state is usually going to occur.
I've done this a lot in my own life. And what I found was that action de-risked everything so much more. The best way to de-risk is to just try it.
Fail fast.
The fail fast thing is really interesting. Because when I talk to certain people about failure, they talk about it as this sort of like vague boogeyman of a thing where if I fail, it's over. And I think that, like, there are certain things that you could try that maybe have those sorts of, like, apocalyptic consequences. How did you sort of train yourself to believe that failure wasn't the end?
Came from a tough upbringing. So I was started everything very failure averse. It's been a long journey. Like, I had some major losses. You know, I've moved on from a lot of things that influenced me growing up. I've had 8 years of therapy. I've worked a lot to move past this sort of personalization of failure. And it's usually framing. Like, remember, there's nothing good nor bad, but thinking makes it so. So what is failure when you take a fancy job that pays six figures? You might say, well, it'd be not having that job anymore. So under what conditions would you leaving this job not be considered a failure?
Right.
You end up in this interesting conversation with yourself, and you realize that it's not that you failed or anything, it's that it just didn't work out. And you have permission to just do something else.
Yeah, and you sort of like preemptively cut yourself off from good things because you don't want to lose. You want to be, you don't
you're afraid
want to be
of losing
left.
Something you never got.
Yeah, you don't want to be left. Yet. You want to be the one who leaves or whatever it is. It's this sort of illusion of control, but it costs so much.
Loss aversion.
Yeah. The only true failure is standing still, because anytime you try something, you get information. There's more input, and you can use that information to make slightly better decisions. The only way to truly fail is to stop getting information, because then you're stuck, you're stagnant. Even the biggest success in the world, it's going to evolve, it's going to change, the situation's going to change, the team's going to turn over, whatever it is. And that doesn't mean that it's a failure. It just means that you're in a different situation and it's time for something new.
And sometimes even a success, like a company being sold, like you built a great company with these people, it got sold, somebody paid money for it, and now they're reorganizing everything and you don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah,
both a failure and a success. In the beginning, I used to think of my career as like this validation of who I was, as though there were like people watching me and judging my basis. It turns out in the end, the only person who was watching me and judging me was myself. But after I stopped thinking about my career as this thing I had to make and establish and maintain, and started thinking of every challenge I have as a puzzle, almost like I'm playing my own version of Portal. You know, like maybe this didn't work out at this opportunity, or maybe I didn't land that client. New day starts, I get up, I try again. What would I do if I just spawned into this body? How would I win today? How would I win the next 5 years? And that's sort of how I play life now. More like a video game than, you know, like a thing that I'm building to give to some future generation that honestly doesn't want it.
I think you just gave me my favorite metaphor for how to think about failure. Treating it like a video game is the embodiment of repeated failure. When you play a game, you get as far as you can, you die, you reset to the last save point, and you try again.
Mm-hmm.
Little bit of loss of progress, but the vast majority of what you've done is still there. It's still yours. You get to make a new choice and try it a different way, and this time you'll get further. You'll get to the next checkpoint.
I think that kind of gamer mentality, it will really serve you well. For me, I got laid off at AWS. The truth is, after that happened, I was like, oh, what do I do now? Where was the last place that felt like home? Where was my last save point?
Right.
I was in London. I spent the pandemic here, and I had a lot of friends. I'd been visiting, and every time I came here, it felt like home. I felt buoyant and light, and so I made it happen.
Yeah.
Back here, spawned in at my last save point. I'm writing a tech career survival guide. All this stuff that they don't put in the How to Get a Big Tech Job books.
Yeah. And you've worked at AWS, you worked at Meta, and you've worked at smaller companies as well, right?
I have. I used to work at small startups, I've worked at open source.
You sort of sampled all the different flavors of tech career.
Yep. And no matter where you go, it's the same patterns, repeated over and over. But I have learned a lot, and I've fallen on my face a lot to learn that, because you got to fail to learn.
Yeah.
And so I've been sharing what I've been learning over on my Substack.
How do you define success? Like, what are you using to measure your own success?
There are a couple of metrics. There's external appearances. Some people care a lot about external appearances. But there's also, for instance, internal dynamics. Some folks, I'm one of them, want to find their people in the corporate world and want to be able to follow that leadership chain to other companies. This is like the flying goose formation. You know, you'll notice, for instance, Sarah Drasner works with a lot of people that she's worked with in the past. And those people love her and they follow her to different companies. And you're like, oh, Sarah Drasner needs help. You have my sword. And that is one of my actual measures of success is like, am I a part of a big goose team, you know, flying V? Maybe not necessarily at the head of it, but is there someone who believes in me who I believe in?
If I fully embrace nihilism and accept that, you know, in the objective sense it has, we're here for a little bit, we'll die, no one will remember. So what does it matter, right? Then how happy or sad I am doesn't really matter to anybody but me. And so I might as well just try to be as happy as I can. And for me, the happiness comes from exploration and it comes from experience. So when I'm surveying options or weighing risks or something, the biggest one that comes to me is like, okay, if I think about this in 10 years and I didn't do this, am I going to be bugged? Am I going to be like, I should have tried that? I'm having fun and people want to be part of that. And they want, you know, their community to have the kind of fun that I look like I'm having. And so then they're willing to bring me in to help. And so it's sort of a, like, my pursuit of play and experience has turned into a revenue stream, as opposed to me trying to, like, build a revenue stream and then find ways to have fun. But the joke that I always make is that a career is a pie-eating contest where the prize for winning is more pie. And so you were talking about finding your people in tech, and that's how I've done it, is just sort of, like, unapologetically being a dork who likes the things I like, and other people go, oh, you're comfortable being a dork? I want to be a dork with you. it's like a fun little way to find your little group of weirdos and be weirdos together. I'm always curious at this point in time, what is driving? Like if you had to answer or fill in the blank on, I do what I do because of blank. What is that blank for you right now?
I do what I do because I'm having fun in the short term. The long term, I do what I do because I'm remaking the world in my own image.
Interesting. Okay. What's the optimal version of that? Or
when I began my tech career, I identified as a woman. I identify as non-binary now. But I was a major actor in women in tech circles. And the community, the industry was at 20% then, 20% women and men. Here it is 2 decades later, still at 20%. I can't help but feel like for all the efforts I made, it didn't really pay off. So that's why these talks of like, man, I don't know if I want to stay in tech happen a lot in those circles. But for me, I stick it out because just by being here, I change the environment. I make it different. I make it easier for fellow NBs to see themselves in the workforce. I create a different illumination in the teams that I'm part of. And just by being here, I change it. I change the game. I change the conversations that are had. I change what people are comfortable saying. But I'm also helping some of my friends who are doing great work, great creators from various walks of life, and helping them hook up with new work so that they can keep doing what they love. And in that way, I'm having a bigger effect than just creating content on my own. I'm empowering other people to be lights too, and to help welcome new people into the industry. Will we still be at 20% in 40 years? I hope not. But hopefully we won't be at 15% if I have anything to say about it.
True. Yeah. For you, what does it mean to have a good career?
It's hard for me to separate work from life. So good career is a lot like having a good life. You should be able to be on your deathbed and point to a couple of projects that you were really happy that you shipped. You're going to have at least a hit list of things that you launched that really, really made people happy or changed their lives for the better, some impact that you had. But I would say it's also just being able to retire, having the fiscal well-being to not worry about the future. But like I said, it's more about the stories you tell in retrospect. Did you lead a life? Did you impact people the way you wanted to? I have a theory that when we get to the end of our life, we get a restart, restore, and quit button option. We'll see. I have a couple of paths not taken, but that just reassures me, like, well, you're playing this route this time. And if you're really curious about those other routes, I'm sure there's an alternate universe you can spawn into and explore them. You won't remember any of it. Under that theory, why spawn in this place at this time? There must be something really special about this moment. And what's special about it? I'm always looking for that. What's special about this moment?
That's a beautiful place to end it, because I'm going to take that home and think about that for a long time.
Wish it all.